Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Midtown Business Radio.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Midtown Business Radio, and this is kind of a neat one. We're bringing back some old friends and some new friends, but people that we met at TEDx Petrie.
Deja vu all over again.
That's right.
And you have already had an opportunity to have a brief conversation with at least one of our guests, and I know that Kevin and Jessica bragged a great deal about the other. So this is going to be a lot of fun.
That's right.
So first up on Midtown Business Radio, please join me in welcoming to the broadcast Amy Baxter, MD, CEO with MMJ Labs, LLC. Boy, there's a lot of letters in this.
A lot of letters.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Stone. It's great to be here.
So tell us a little bit about your lab. What are you studying? What are you doing?
I study pain. I make a device that blocks needle pain. So the labs were honestly in my basement soldering vibrators, actually, and working with cold packs to make something that could interrupt pain signals.
And pain for a specific group of people. Is that right?
You know, I started for kids getting shots. I wanted something that would block the pain of any injection. So I wanted kind of like when the dentist goes blah, 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 to your lip.
Where he grabs your lip. My dentist used to grab my lip and then like pull on it.
Right.
Squeeze it, right?
Yeah, that lip jiggle thing. So I wanted to replicate that feeling so that you wouldn't feel a needle.
Now, is that a magic trick? Like, is that just distracting me or is something happening physiologically that's actually blocking the pain?
It's a cool question. It's something called gate control. And probably the easiest way to understand it is if you burn your finger and you stick it under cold water, instantly the burn disappears, right? Mm. It's not distraction. What's happening is that the nerve that carries pain and cold and motion all combines in the spine and one message goes to the brain. So if you can overwhelm pain with enough cold and motion, just like that burn feeling, you can block out the pain. And you can use it anywhere on the body, with possible exception of like bikini wax area. It has to be an area where there's just one set of nerves going. And then if you just put something between the brain and the pain, you can block the pain.
Now, was this just a general desire of something you wanted to address, or were you as a kid particularly afraid of needles, or as a doctor you just got tired of dealing with people that were afraid of needles, or what really compelled you to take this kind of a leap?
Well, part of the problem is that doctors often like needles. I didn't mind shots at all.
Getting them.
I didn't care. I thought it was interesting. Wow. A lot of doctors are like that, so we don't have a lot of empathy when somebody else has a problem with shots.
Some doctors lack empathy.
I know. I'm glad you're sitting down.
A new discovery.
Well, and as a doctor, for my profession, I kind of felt like, well, I'm on the inside. So my kid, when he went for his shots, is going to be given the kid glove treatment. And instead, this person said, you better sit there and be still or this is really going to hurt. And then just jabbed him home and made him afraid of needles. And it's about 63% of kids now because they're getting so many shots. So I really came up with the idea to help my own kid. But once I had the solution for my son and I had this little gadget in my pocket when I was at the hospital, I started feeling bad because there'd be a kid who'd be screaming because they were holding him down to do a blood draw or injecting something to sew up a laceration. And I wanted to run in with my little buzzy device and save the day. And, of course, I didn't have any literature. I hadn't tested it. I didn't have any randomized controlled trials. I had my kid in a basement with a soldering iron and and a vibrator. So my husband finally said, all right, look, you're just going to keep feeling bad every time you feel like you could make a difference and you haven't put this out there. So we decided, how long could it take? A couple years, you know.
So you need FDA approval to use this device?
Well, FDA approval is for the device itself. It's not to use it. It's for me to manufacture and sell it. So, yeah, I had to be FDA registered.
Wow.
And
even though the device doesn't poke me or anything, right?
No, it's a class one device. So all therapeutic massagers and ice packs are class one devices. Mm-hmm. So technically, I didn't need research for people to use it for, say, like arthritis pain or carpal tunnel or something where they're putting it on just to get anti-inflammation and vibration.
Right.
But for needles, I got $1 million NIH grant to study it because I couldn't advertise that it blocked needle pain until I knew that it blocked needle pain.
I knew, but
medicine's kind of sticky about facts, you know? They want hard numbers and percentages and confidence intervals.
Now, so what was that experience like? Because you were being a doctor, is a lot different than going through and getting approval and grants and all this stuff. This is a whole different business for you.
Well, I was already a researcher, so the getting grants part was actually very comfortable. That was familiar. I knew how to do research. What I didn't know was how to find a manufacturer. And in fact, I almost got derailed a bunch of times, but one was because I couldn't find a vibrating motor. And I know I've said this word too many times. I'm going to say massager. So I had taken apart my massager and I was trying to source a motor that was smaller so I could make it fit in your hand rather than be too big. Couldn't find vibrating motor in any catalog. Finally, I went with some Georgia Tech grad students down to a shop on Cheshire Bridge, and I found a bunch of them. They were on sale. I bought them. I took them apart, and one of them had a part number on it that I was able to track down. Cylinder motor is the word you want.
Cylinder motor.
Yes, if you're going to try to make something wiggle, you want a cylinder motor. And so that unlocked a lot. So then I was able to get a bunch of different ones and test them. But unquestionably, the part that was the hardest was the business part, was the manufacturing, was finding somebody to help guide me through all
of
that.
So how did you attack that? Well, you're a researcher, so you just probably researched inventions and...
You know, I had a good friend who looked at design firms, mm-hmm. and she found Formation Design in Atlanta, and they are the biggest group of boys. They make paintball guns. They make airplanes. They make all of these.
So you figured your thing would be easy.
I thought that they would laugh at me, but as has happened several times in the process, one of the people had a problem with needles, and so he got it, and his kid... developed diabetes while we were working on this. And so we actually rushed one of the prototypes to her, and it made a huge difference for her. And so they ended up doing a lot of our design work and then helping us find manufacturers and just really being incredible allies. And they did it kind of on spec. I said, I'm going to apply for this big grant. And they believed in me, and they believed that I'd get the grant and be able to pay him eventually. And it did.
What a great story.
It all worked out. I love you, Russell Kroll in Formation Design.
But that was...
My peeps.
I mean, for an inventor, that's an unusual story to get that kind of support.
I have an N of one. As we say in research, N of one study. I don't know. That's how it happened for me.
So in your study, did you find that it worked as well for adults as it does for children? Or?
So it actually works better for adults than children. In fact,
really?
It's been really disappointing in some ways that for 4 to 6 year olds, which is when it really matters, only about 20% of them feel nothing when they get the shot. Teenagers, about 60% of people feel nothing, and seniors, 84% of them found shots to be completely painless with Buzzy. The reason that the physiology works better for adults is because, in part, they don't have just the terror. They can separate out just the plain fear. But the other reason is that there's something called descending inhibitory control. And basically, part of Buzzy's an ice pack. And for little kids and kids with people with thin skin, the ice pack is too cold. As you get older, your skin gets thicker. And you also get better able to kind of dampen down sensations. You know, little kids may be stimulated by a tag on the back of their neck, or maybe even by a taste that's too strong. As an adult, you dampen those sensations and those tastes down. And so that ability to dampen down sensations works better in adults. So the ice stimulates something that's intense enough that for adults, it makes us shut down everything. We just don't feel pain as much. It takes up so much bandwidth coping with the ice that you don't feel pain. Little kids don't have that. You develop it as you get older.
So now if the shot's like in my arm, do I have to put Buzzy like next to the shot, or where does Buzzy go?
Right. So for a shot, you're going to put it on the spot itself for about 30 to 60 seconds, depending on...
So before the shot.
So after doesn't do you a lot of good. Well, it does if it stings from the flu shot this year. So you put it on before to kind of numb up the area. And then while the shot's going on, you put Buzzy between the brain and the pain. So you just slide it about an inch away and then do the shot. So Buzzy's actually physically between your brain and the pain.
And who holds Buzzy?
Depends on... where it is. A parent could hold Buzzy with their arm, like put their arm around their child and hold it on the shoulder. People can hold it themselves if someone else is doing the shot. Mm-hmm. If you're giving yourself a shot, like arthritis shots or something in the stomach, then you can just hold Buzzy. It's small enough while you can hold it and pinch up the skin to give the shot.
Right.
But if you're we have a, if it's being for something like shin splints or plantar fasciitis or something where you're actually just holding it in place to relieve the pain, it comes with a strap that'll hold
it. So it works for that as well?
Yeah, that's actually low-hanging fruit. That's a lot easier to take care of than needle pain.
Oh, really?
Aches and pains are easy, yeah.
So, like I have gout. Would it work on gout?
Yes, totally. It's any pain.
Wow.
It's itching. It's anything that goes on this. It's called an A-delta nerve.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't matter what. So it's burning pain like the water, the cold running water. It's itching. Anything on that particular nerve, it's going to be good for. It's kind of like you'd ice an injury, right? So Buzzy just adds some pizzazz with
buzzes.
The vibration. and
no extra charge.
Right. Actually, high-frequency vibration is being used for chronic pain now.
Uh-huh.
They're doing whole body. But it happens to be the same frequency that I stumbled across with Buzzy. So it makes sense. I mean,
yeah.
And so was there a Cyber Monday or Black Friday special on these things? Or how do you go about, or do you have to get the right size and the right... I don't know, frequency of vibration for the right type of pain? Or
oh, we had everything was free on our website yesterday. You should have
missed
been
it.
There.
Dadgummit.
BuzzyForShots.com.
So you can go on a website,
and
though?
Yeah.
All kidding aside, and buy it?
Right. If you Google Buzzy, we show up top of everything. But it's BuzzyForShots or BuzzyForPainRelief.com.
Uh-huh.
We're also on Amazon and drugstore.com. And
but it's a cute little gizmo for the kids. I mean, right? I mean, I'm looking here at one you brought in. It looks like a little, I don't know, Furby or
penguin
something.
Yeah, this is actually one that a major lab draw company bought. They're buying thousands of them. So
nice.
I happen to have one in here. So the real Buzzy looks like this little bee, and we have a lady buzz. And we have for the adults who want to look kind of slick and cool, then we have a plain black one. And for the teenagers who want to look slick and cool and weird, we've got a bunch of stickers so they can make
customize
a pirate
it.
Or a
oh,
yeah,
that's great.
You know, Mexican wrestling mask or a booger.
But your decision is largely cosmetic. The gizmo itself is the same across
correct,
the board,
correct.
Right?
Actually, the vibration and the motor are the same. The ones that hospitals buy, we're in about 1,200 hospitals now. So the hospitals and the ones that like this, the lab draw company is getting, those have two different speeds. As much as anything, it's just because some patients feel better having more control over differing speeds. It
right.
turns out the frequency is pretty much the same for everybody. It's a really high frequency, low amplitude vibration.
So now, so you're selling it to the consumer directly as well as to doctors?
Right. One of the reasons that I had to do this myself was because companies wanted to make it disposable. And I just, I see so much waste in the hospitals and in the world, and it just was stupid to me. And I was a little offended that when I found out that people make things disposable or obsolete on purpose, that just seemed wrong.
Right.
So I wanted it to be available direct. And they said, well, if you're going to make it reusable, then you better make it really stupid expensive. And that didn't seem to make sense either.
It's interesting, so,
yeah,
the rules in the medical profession.
Well, it's medical device manufacturing and to make a profit. So I was like, well, I'm going to see what I can make this over the counter. So, so patients buy it directly because they care more about pain than
the
their doctor does.
Right.
And everyone seems to be so in a hurry that they don't have time. They say, I don't have time for pain control. So I wanted Buzzy to be something that was really empowerment in the patient's hands. You bring it with you. You say, hold up, I'm using this. This is how it goes down. And it's a lot more effective than having to hope that a hospital's going to have one ready or that your lab draw company's going to have one.
So now, but you did say that you are selling in mass to some companies, medical
yes,
companies.
Yes, so we have...
What, do they cover it? Like have a sheath, the disposable something that goes over it?
Well, you can actually clean it. I mean, it doesn't have any parts that'll accumulate MRSA or goo.
Right.
So you can just take an alcohol swab or a sani wipe. And
so they're okay
and
with
clean.
That?
Yeah, and we have two different kinds of wings. The ice wings that people will buy for home use have a soft side, so it's less cold for people that are sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
The hospital ones don't have that. They just have a cleanable set of wings that you can just take a sani wipe to and sterilize it between patients.
And it's just a simple button. You push the button down, and it starts doing its thing.
There you go. Check it out.
Yeah,
check it out.
For
here
it.
Go.
Go
right.
for it. Oh, wow. That
there
is high frequency.
There's and here's the second speed for the medic one.
Wow. I'd
I know,
pay extra
right?
for that.
Woohoo. This is hours of fun.
That is way cool. Okay, so I want to shift gears here for a minute. I want to hear about your experience as a TEDx Peachtree speaker. What was that like?
Utter mental bungee jump. was difficult. Since I'm used to talking to scientists or lecturing to physicians, it was very difficult encapsulating what I wanted to say in only 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And it was also, it took probably a good month of really writing and rewriting and memorizing and preparing. So when I went on, there was this kind of crystalline anxiety, just this aura of being totally prepared, but having worked so long to do it. And then when I was on stage, it was just this free fall exhilaration. It was so much fun. The audience gasped at the right spots, and they and I was gonna, it's like, all right, I'm gonna do the cheesy, okay, let's all close our eyes now thing. And so I did the cheesy, okay, everybody, TEDx moment, close your eyes. They did it. They totally did it. It was like, I was a rock star. It was like power. All right, now you're all chickens. It was cool.
Well, I'm sure the topic was extremely well received. I mean, this is something that strikes a chord with virtually everyone, right. I would think. My own daughter, junior in high school now, last year, was injured in practice for gymnastics and got blood clot complications, and she ended up having to take the shot.
Yeah,
yeah. For a long time, 30, 60, too. 90 days or whatever, and I'm sure she would have loved to have this thing.
Yeah, Buzzy's particularly good for the burning medications. We have a lot of people who are using it for their arthritis shots,
right.
Not because they mind needles, but just because those medications burn so much. So yeah, Lovenox, we have a lot of people. The TEDx is not really about Buzzy at all. The TEDx is about the rise of needle phobia, the cause of needle phobia, mm-hmm. and the consequences. Because people don't like talking about fear, and because we don't like being weak, we're not addressing the problem that needle phobia is growing. It turns out it's conditioned when you're about 4 to 6 years old, and that's right when we give 4 or 5 shots at once. And so that conditioning experience doesn't go away. So then we have all of these adults who are just quietly not going to the doctor and not getting vaccinated and not getting HPV shots for their kids. I mean, it compounds the problem. But because I say that trying to figure out the incidence of needle phobia from a medical standpoint is like trying to find out how many people at a football game hate football. You know, if you do your survey only where the people come who aren't afraid, then how are you ever going to find out what the real number is?
So, and kids have more shots today than they did like when we were children. Is that right?
Is that right?
Yeah. If you're born before 1983, you got 6 shots before you were 2 years old, and that was it. And now kids get between 24 and 36 shots.
Whoa.
And because you have to get so many, the ones less than 2 don't really matter because your memory is different and it doesn't cause this lifelong fear.
Mm-hmm.
But getting 4 or 5 on the same day is, you've got between a 46.
That's a therapy moment, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's when, so that's why I was bummed that Buzzy works so well for adults, but it's not as good for the younger kids, because it can help, but we've got to start earlier. We've got to do, there was one study that used Buzzy, but it also used these little distraction cards. And so letting them actually focus on something else and actually being distracted, like you talked about, that was much more effective than just using Buzzy by itself for that age kid.
Because I guess the kid just builds it up in their head that this is going to be so terrible, and it just gets magnified.
It's a fear is such an interesting, I mean, it's the same thing as fear of spiders or fear of talking in front of crowds. Fears aren't rational. So trying to really understand how to address them is hard. One study in New Zealand looked at Buzzy in patients who were supposed to be getting bicillin shots for rheumatic fever. They already were afraid. They already were upset. And it found that it took 3 times using Buzzy before the fear dropped by about half.
Huh.
So it's one thing that you can do, like the child who had diabetes who started using Buzzy, she'd been terrified of needles. She used Buzzy every single shot, had to get it FedExed back to her. And then over about 2 or 3 weeks, it was kind of like, yeah, maybe I'll go get the ice packs. Maybe it's too much hassle. And then, meh, maybe I don't want to use Buzzy at all. And that's cool. I mean, that's the thing, is you have to gradually get them to the place where they're like, you know, this really isn't that big a deal.
Now, you continue to doctor and research and that kind of thing? Or are you just on the Buzzy train now? Or what's happening with you and your career?
The Buzzy train has left the station. I am on a 6-month sabbatical. I start back at the hospital on Friday.
Ah.
Well, are you looking forward to that, or you want to get back on the Buzzy train?
I'm in the truest sense of the word, ambivalent. It's hard to know how many people you can help the most.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I love taking care of patients, and I love being at the hospital.
That one-on-one interaction and seeing them, because you have less of that now with Buzzy.
It's very true. I mean, we'll get a testimonial once or twice right. a week from someone who's like, oh my God, this is great, this is amazing, this helps.
But it's different than looking them in the
it's
eyes.
It's really different right? than feeling like you've changed one person's trajectory and you can see it.
Right.
So fortunately, I have an amazing medical group at PEMA, Children's Healthcare of Atlanta. So the pediatric emergency group has been really flexible in letting me do both things. I'm still publishing. I'm still doing research. I've got an accumulation of all this data from the NIH study that I'm putting out slowly as I try to outsource some of the business work so that I can do more of the research
right.
work. I think ultimately my favorite thing is the research work.
So now with Buzzy, you mentioned that you're outsourcing some of it. What was that like from a business standpoint? Now you're trusting somebody else with your baby.
Well, what's ironic is my group is the Buzzy Babes. I hired six women, and plus or minus two at any given season, and that's actually been joyous.
That's been rewarding
really
as well,
joyful.
Right? Because
yeah.
now you're impacting other people's lives by helping other people. That's kind of a multiplier effect.
It's lovely. In fact, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, seven years ago when we started, the people that helped when I was in the prototype phase, I said, look, you know, when this gets big, we're going to go on a Disney cruise. When this gets big, we're all going to go on a Disney cruise. Every year, we're going to go on a Disney cruise. I put the down payment down yesterday. We're
yes.
actually all going on a Disney cruise.
<That's great. laughs>
We've got eight families who helped and believed and worked for less than their market rate or worked for free. And three of the people that still work for me and have from the beginning were all going on a Disney cruise. The kids are teenagers now, though, so they're like, oh, great. Mickey, wonderful.
What an outstanding story, and I can tell you from experience, the teenagers are still going to enjoy the Disney cruise. I thoroughly enjoy it. It really is a fantastic experience. What a great story. It's inspiring. And I got to believe, just given the lens through which you view the world, it's not going to surprise me one bit if she's back in the studio in months to come with another gizmo or another idea or another set of findings, because you are genuinely trying to figure out how to help people, and you're in that environment every day.
It's great to have a lever from which to a fulcrum from which to use the lever of the medical training. There's so few doctors who have that eye, and so it really
yeah.
is a gift and a great thing to be able to straddle both worlds and put something out and do it in a way that I think is ethical and is helpful and a new interesting model for business as well.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you in the studio. I want to make sure that our listeners know how to get in touch with you or get access to the Buzzy. So if you'll leave us with those coordinates one more time, the website or...
Sure. Buzzy4shots.com or just Google Buzzy. We pop up or go on Amazon.
Fantastic. Hey, listen, you got to hang out with us while we visit with our next guest?
Oh, I know what your next guest has. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
All right. Next up on Midtown Business Radio, we have with us the co-founder of Frozen Pints Craft Beer Ice Cream. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, Miss Allie Moeller. How you doing?
I'm pretty well. How are you guys? Thank you for having me.
Feeling no pain. So far, anyway.
Well,
what do you think about this thing?
We have two things here that kind of serve that same purpose.
Yeah, that's it's right. In the similar space, another kind of buzz, perhaps. So
tell us about this ice cream, because this is not your grandmother's ice cream here.
It is not. It is ice cream made with beer. And it's pretty simple. Beer is an ingredient, just like anything else. There's actually more beer than anything else, more beer than cream. But it actually has
that's the right
content.
Ratio for Stone.
That's perfect.
But yeah, we started selling June of last year. So
forget about selling. Tell me about that moment where you're like, let's make
hey,
some
I
ice cream.
I have an idea.
Where's the beer?
Yeah. So
well, was it like the Reese's peanut butter cup moment? You know, the chocolate and the peanut butter?
Similar. literally, my partner, Ari, had a party and a friend brought over an ice cream maker. Someone spilled a beer in the kitchen while they were prepping things.
They spilled a beer.
Spilled a beer. He
watched
it
in the ice cream.
It wasn't in the ice cream maker. It was just nearby, and he kind of was watching this whole thing, and was like, well, we don't want to waste the rest of that beer. Why don't we pour it in?
Why didn't he just drink it?
Not sure. But yeah, he had it. It was one of those, I guess, genius moments or another
wow.
term. But yeah, he decided to pour it in, and the first batch came out pretty good. It was a great flavor. You could taste the beer.
What
was
the base flavor?
It was actually the same beer that was in our vanilla bock, and I can't tell you what it is. It's okay. Our secret
recipe. It's a
secret
ingredient.
But yeah, we have five different flavors today. The vanilla was the original, but they're all based on these different styles of beer, and we try not to add anything.
Is it like Budweiser?
They're all craft beers.
Craft beers.
Yep.
That you guys are the crafters?
No, we source the beer from wherever. It's really about finding the best beer, the beer that most exemplifies that style. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes we'll add complementary things. Like in our brown ale chip, we add dark chocolate chips to kind of balance out the bitterness and the hazelnut. In our honey IPA, we add a local wildflower honey to balance out kind of that citrusy.
Who's
note
the taster
at the end?
That's palate is kind of behind all this?
We both work on the product. I'd say I'm maybe the ultimate taste tester, but we kind of split things. I'm sort of everything from product forward, and my partner handles all the kind of back end functions. So there's just two of us today. But yeah, it's Frozen Pints. I don't know if I've said that yet, but that's what it's called.
You can't say it enough. That's really the bottom line. You can't say it enough. Can you get this only like in stores, or you can get it, you're going to mail it to me? How do I get my hands on this?
So because it actually has an alcohol content, we worked for about a year and a half to figure out how it'd be regulated. So it is regulated as basically it's a beer. So we sell through an alcohol distributor, just like a brewery, and our products
are found.
Did that
surprise you that you had to do that?
No, that was actually one of the first things we started to explore. We knew we'd have to figure it out at some point, but really the bigger opportunity was just alcoholic ice cream in that space, and no one had really has done anything in that area.
Is it hard to freeze, or you have to do something special to?
It's really just about the ratio and the alcohol content of the product that you're starting with and kind of figuring that out. It's an all natural product. It's pretty simple in the ingredients. We use a couple of natural stabilizers, but it's selling in Whole Foods. And
it's already in Whole Foods?
They were actually one of our first accounts. Cool. They have been big. They're great supporters of local food producers.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. So you on board with this, Doc? What do you think about this beer and the ice cream thing?
How many pints?
I want soft serve and a growler. That's
got to
be coming
that?
Next.
We're working on a couple other things. But yeah, we've got a lot of fun things that we can do with it. We have seasonal flavors that we release. We actually just released our limited release series. So we are partnering with breweries.
Do restaurants take this too?
We do have some restaurants. Uh-huh. It's available in Taco Mac and some other kind of gastropub, craft beer focused places around Atlanta and up through Athens. Cypress Street Pint and Plate's one of them.
Is it mainly in Georgia right now?
We're just in Georgia. We just expanded to Athens this summer, I guess, and are looking at Savannah possibly for the spring. But we also have another product launch we're looking at as well. So we kind of want to focus on the Georgia market, and there's a lot of work still here to be done. We sell in mostly liquor stores, package stores, growler stores, and it's really about kind of saturating the market. And, you know, it's the first time ice cream's been available in a place like that, so kind of we're creating a category and really kind of changing behavior for shoppers that are going in there. So
are you going to have things like, you know, Sweetwater?
There's a Terrapin, right?
A Terrapin
beer.
Yeah,
excellent.
Yeah. So our first we launched with Moohoo Mint. So Terrapin makes a chocolate milk stout called Moohoo. It's brewed with cocoa nibs from a chocolatier in Nashville. And we added a little hint of mint, and it's our kind of holiday limited release flavor, Moohoo Mint.
Is that what you have with you?
I do have some with me and a few others.
Let's break that out then.
Yeah,
right?
Would you like to
try? And I have a small, unfortunately empty, honey IPA. And
that's
I
a
like
prop.
The.
She
I like
has
the,
real stuff.
I know she's got real stuff she's going to pull out too, but I like something that's like the hoppy. And IPAs have a little bit stronger hoppy.
Yeah, I want a Hopsecution or butterscotch.
I want the mint.
Speaking of Terrapin.
I like that.
Yeah, Hopsecution is a Terrapin, right?
You can submit your flavor ideas.
Man,
I know my craft.
But yeah, the
Are we
the
allowed
IPA.
To drive after this? What are the rules?
We don't
it
have
really
to. We have Michael.
Depends on how much you eat.
Like what? If I have a pint, I shouldn't drive? What's the ratio?
So, every pint has a different alcohol content, just like any beer you would have. And it, you know, it ranges from 1 to just under 4%. So we've got a peach lambic. kind of champagne-like. It's more for someone who's not into craft beer, really, but enjoys wine and champagne. That's kind of a great flavor for them.
And if you put that little buzzy thing between the pain and the brain,
then you can drive.
There's no alcohol effects.
I'm actually wondering whether it can make a milkshake. The buzzy, you can drop it in the glass.
Yeah, that's perfect. In the glass.
So while we're talking, I just want all our listeners to know that everyone here on the panel we're sampling this stuff, and
we're all over 21.
We're getting close to getting a spoon here in just a moment, and I am just waiting with great anticipation.
This is exciting.
This is very exciting. So
get any on the microphone.
So now you're kind of on a roll. You got a little momentum. Yeah. You've been to the TEDx Peachtree thing, but when you first went out there with this idea, did people just look at you like you were just crazy? They had to just...
No, they thought this was a great idea. This is like
right out of the box?
I think so.
Yeah?
I mean, we get a lot of different reactions. Most of them are positive.
Can you hook up our engineer?
I don't have another spoon. Sorry,
bad break for you.
you can take it as a shot.
We'll power through
it. A shot of beer ice cream. So
tastes like college.
We had many a beer and ice cream moment.
You know, and the great
there were some mornings, I'm not going to say.
That is really, really good. Now, what is this flavor that we're having right now?
This is our newest flavor. It's a Terrapin Muhu Mint. So we've got a kind of fun little limited release package.
Delicious.
But this actually is a kind of an innovation for us. It allows us to create new flavors and collaborations a lot faster than if you had to kind of put together this whole package of something unique by flavor. So we'll be able to do these a lot more frequently.
So packaging was kind of holding you back a little?
Yeah, I mean, it's similar to the story we heard previously, that finding you've got a great idea and then you don't always think about all the pieces that you have to put in place to get that product actually to market. I mean, finding a distributor and learning the alcohol laws and, you know, just all those, you know, where do you source your cream from and what kind of things have to be on the package? Like we also went down the street, went to a grocery store, picked up some pints of beer and ice cream and looked at what was on there. There's no product like this in market when we started selling.
Right.
So, you know, we really are kind of writing the standard for what has to be on here. Because it's an alcoholic product, it actually, by law, we're not required to have any nutrition facts on there, but ice cream is regulated by the FDA, so it's something that has to be on
there. Oh, so it does have the nutrition stuff on the back of it. And just for our listeners, just so you know, this isn't like just splashing a little beer when you're boiling your hot dogs or throwing a little bit in your seafood. You can genuinely taste the beer, can't you, Doc? I mean, you taste the beer, and it's wonderful.
It is wonderful. Did you have any combinations that completely tanked?
Bombed.
There were a few. My partner tried to make a beer de garde, which is it just has a really interesting flavor. And I think he tried to do it with like olive oil and something. I was, you know, just following kind of the foodie craft ice cream.
Right.
It was
pizza ice cream.
Horrible.
That was horrible.
But yeah, no, I mean, beer really has a lot of great complex flavor that works
man
really
you
well
are a good sampler I'll tell you that
I know she got these little bitty shot glasses she hadn't spilled a drop.
Can we have seconds before we
yes.
go to the next
you're really all over that Terrapin.
I think you
could be a Terrapin spokesperson.
Well,
maybe you should rename
them.
The buzzy the Terrapin.
I think you guys can work together here.
Like
it's a combo. You have to put ice on it. Right?
Oh,
buzzy
yeah,
and ice.
Yeah,
why not?
Well, then,
a pint of ice cream.
Right, then you could like open up the ice wings and
look.
I like it.
There's a lot of ways to work together.
Possibilities here. So what's your backstory? Did you have a real job before all this, or this is it? You went to school, you had a blast, and now you're doing this?
Yeah, no, I did. I actually worked at Nielsen, and that's where my partner and I met. So we did market research. We were on the
another researcher
services
here.
Team. So you know, we worked with really big consumer products companies to help them understand how their products were selling and what the retail environment was and the competitive environment and pricing strategies, advertising strategies, things like that. So thank you.
All right. So the second one that I'm eating,
that
this
tastes
is
more beer-like.
This is a completely different taste.
Yes.
I like it. I like the first one better, but I like this, but this is a completely different taste. What is this one?
So this is the honey IPA. So since these have melted a little bit, you can really, really taste the flavor, but local wildflower honey, you get that floral sweetness up front and then a really citrusy
hop
finish.
That's what I'm tasting is the honey.
So
You like that? Which one you like the best?
I'm gonna make a milkshake out of it here.
That's great.
I'm still all about the moo-hoo.
The mint.
Well, when I first saw the packages, you heard me say that I was kind of on the honey IPA because I know I enjoyed the IPA, but I think I like the terrapin, the moose thing best out of those two. But I think I could probably be pretty content with virtually any of them.
I'm done. I got to drive.
Frozen pints.
Well, and I wasn't going to buy my brother Rusty a holiday present, but I think I'm going to get him some frozen pints.
So now, tell us about the Nielsen adventure. Are you no longer with them? You're all in on the frozen pints?
Yeah, I left in September of last year, and my partner actually left right when we started selling back in June. But yeah, there was a moment where...
Tell me that conversation with your parents. That you're like, you know, you might have heard of Nielsen. That's kind of a large company, and I'm leaving them to go all in with the beer and ice cream plant.
I would have liked to have seen that conversation. Yeah.
You know, my partner's conversation was a little bit funnier. His because he actually flew to Vegas and took a crash course in ice cream making.
Right, because in Nielsen
so
they don't probably
only,
have
I'm
a big
my job
ice cream
to start
training
a beer
program.
Ice cream company, right. But I'm doing that in Vegas, so. See ya. But no, my parents have been incredibly supportive through all of it. You know, they're foodies. They love, you know, getting out and being around people and socializing. And I think that, you know, that's part of why I ended up doing something like this. I always wanted something in the food world or wanted to do something in the food world. Wasn't quite sure. Didn't have any kind of background in anything culinary. No food or beverage experience at all, but wanted, you know, that was where I spent all my free time and money. So I knew I wanted to get into that space at some point. And this just sort of happened. People ask me all the time, like, did you ever think you'd start a beer ice cream company? Like, absolutely not. and it's still kind of weird
it's
to think about it now. But
now,
yeah.
How long has it been since the moment the beer spilled and to where we are today?
It's been about 3 years. We actually started, took it out to market and sampled for about a year. Well, a little less than a year, but brought it around to beer festivals, handed out tons and tons of samples, even sold, found out it had an alcohol content, and put the brakes
right.
on that.
Because you figured out, just go for it.
But
right?
Yeah, and even at that point, you know, it was something where we thought it would always live in that kind of festival environment. There's, you know, basically a festival or three
right.
on every weekend
sure.
in this area. So, you know, we listened to the market and people were asking where they could buy it when, you know, the festivals weren't around. You know, I want to buy more of this at home and enjoy it there. And so that's when we started thinking, well, maybe retail is probably, you know, is the better route to go.
But you had no experience in this kind of distribution. I mean, you had done research stuff with Nielsen, right? So you understood that kind of concept. That it seems like people like
yeah,
this. You had enough data points to kind of validate the concept, right?
Yeah. And, you know, when being out in that festival environment, it put us all around a lot of industry people. We met a ton of people that first year and were able to talk with them about the concept. And really, I mean, if anyone's starting anything, just ask as many questions that you can
right.
with anyone that has started anything.
Because it sounds good at a party, you know, it doesn't mean in real life it's going to be good.
Yeah, I mean, and once you get kind of people who have some sort of industry expertise, I mean, they're people that can help you down the road as well. And hopefully you'll be able to help them as well.
Now, what was the tipping point? Like when you have this idea, you pour beer in there, you make some, you're like, hey, this is pretty good. And everybody in the party's like, yeah, high five. Great idea. You're a genius. And then you go out, right?
You take it to sober people.
Right. You're like, see if this still, the next day it still makes sense, right? So then you go out there and you go, hey, let's do a festival, right? At some point you said, let's see if this really is a good idea.
Put it
right?
up against the fried Oreos, right?
Right. And then what was that point where you're like, you know what? This really, really might be something. When did that occur?
You know, that first summer when we were taking it to festivals, we had the longest line at every single event. And it was just the feedback was just incredible. I mean, and then looking at we started to see, you know, beer ice cream or stout ice cream pop up on menus at restaurants. A lot of times products like this start in an on-premise environment or restaurant
right.
or bakery environment, and then eventually make it to retail years and years down the road. And we kind of skipped that step and realized, you know, we getting our foot in the door anywhere is going to be hard enough. Let's kind of invest in this whole package of bringing it to retail, create a category. You know, it's really the first product of its kind. We don't think there's anyone else doing anything like this, and want to be a first mover in that. And
did you get investment? Did people, like, how'd you get the money to fund all this?
We, friends and family, personal everything, savings.
There's probably not an NIH grant for it.
Yeah, not so much. Yeah. But no, we actually are fundraising right now. So for our second launch of products, which will...
So you're ready for another round of funding. You would be open to some additional funding.
Yeah, this is actually our first round that's open right now.
Okay.
Did you do like a Kickstarter? Did you look at any of that kind of crowdfunding?
We did. We considered it. For a product like ours and the amount of money we're trying to raise, it's not maybe the best fit a lot of times with a device or something like that. A lot of times people will, you know, you pledge something or you invest something, right, and then you get the thing at the end once
you can be sending them pints of ice cream.
Well, it's illegal for us to do that. So, yeah, there's some, you know, alcohol laws that prohibit us from really taking advantage of some of those systems in the best way.
Maybe you can sell them a T-shirt and send them free ice cream.
Your wheels are turning. I see you contributing to this Kickstarter campaign.
But no, there's a different fundraising strategy for every kind of product.
Right.
For us, it's taken a little bit longer than you know, we thought. Neither of us had done anything like that before, too.
Right.
So, I mean, everything we've done with this has really been a big learning experience. And, you know, you just try to take it in stride. And
so it's you two are the drivers of all this. Do you have somebody that has ice cream experience, beer experience, distribution experience
I've
in your
beer
team?
Experience.
Well, I have several.
You're definitely
years
a consumer. Yeah, that's for sure.
No, I mean, we really didn't. It was we did when we first started. You know, we found a law firm that specialized in alcohol law, so that was a partner
that's important.
That we
you gotta get that part right.
Yeah, that was one thing we knew we needed kind of to have on our side. And then we started looking for co-packers or manufacturers, because for us to invest in a big facility,
right, that doesn't make sense at this
yeah.
stage, right?
So, I mean, and the facility that we work with has been in business for 40 years, and we've just developed a good relationship with them. So they've got some of that expertise, but it's really you know, it's the kind of thing you really have to get in and learn. And it, I mean, it's ice cream. It's not super complicated. And you know, at least this started in a kitchen. It's not something that's started in a lab or is that
right.
complex. And we can, you know, we can play with it and explore a little bit easier than some other more complicated things.
So you need more investors. That's what you're looking for right now. You need more restaurants to, what do you need right now from our listeners?
We just need more people to know about it, really.
You
know, it's the kind of product where we have a very grassroots kind of marketing strategy. I mean, we're a startup, we're small, and to get this product in market is pretty expensive. So we don't have a ton of money to advertise,
sure.
But it is a really cool thing to tell your friends about. And
it's
really just about reaching. Yeah.
So if more people went to frozenpints.com.
Yeah, or just learning about it. It's a great gift. It's something fun to bring to a dinner party instead of wine. Everyone else is bringing that. It's a conversation piece. It's kind of a fun little treat for a couple's date night. It's great if your boyfriend breaks up with you. You want to drink?
This is a
drink
way
and eat away your sorrows.
Yeah, it's a way classier thing to bring to someone's dinner party than a bottle of wine.
That's right.
But the packaging is really beautiful. Who does your artwork and how
Thank
did you,
you
find them?
We actually worked with a freelance designer, a friend of a friend. She had done some packaging work before, but you know, we really just were collaborative kind of with her. We knew we wanted it to look like a pint of beer, and that was kind of the guiding beacon for this. And mm-hmm. each, you know, the flavors are represented by the colors on the packaging of the beers that they contain. And that was just kind of our concept. And we're actually working on the packaging for our second line right now. So
but the only way to get it is in a location. They can't get it any other way.
Yeah, we sell in retail stores, so or restaurants. So mm-hmm. you can find it, you know, at Taco Mac, for example. It's actually on the beer menu, and you even get Brewniversity credit for ordering it. And then at stores, we actually have a locator on our website, so you can type in an address, and it'll tell you all the locations nearby. But mm-hmm. The freezer, once you know it's there in the store, you'll see it every time. But
sure.
it's one of those things that you just might not notice.
And
you
may
don't
not
have
connect
to walk
the dots
there.
That
Yeah.
Right.
Maybe you can sell a little insulated bag that they can put next to the freezer so people can see it immediately, get the bag, and then they can take it to the dinner party.
Yeah, we've thought about doing something like that.
You could sell that on the website.
We definitely could. Yeah, no, we... I wish I could multiply myself sometimes to get all those things done.
Yeah, but, I was going
to
ask, how do you scale? And that's the hard thing, is getting more help that's the right kind of help. Right?
Yeah, exactly. And we're actually hiring someone to help with this launch of our second line. So, but yeah, we're still small and are growing and trying to grow organically a little bit, and at least learn the market really well here in Atlanta and figure out how the alcohol distribution systems work in conjunction with this frozen component. And then take that and kind of replicate it in other places. So, but yeah, we get crazy hits on our website from Australia and places in Europe. And they're like, can you ship this? We want this here. And
you can't.
Like, one day, maybe in 20 years.
Well, that must be frustrating. It's exciting and frustrating all at the same time.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it is.
You should be very proud of yourself to take an idea and execute it to this level. You've done a wonderful job.
Thank you. It's been a good journey, trying, learning experience, but I've met some amazing people that I don't think I ever would have crossed paths with before, and had some great opportunities. I mean, even being part of TEDx was something I never saw myself doing. And
you're now the official beer ice cream of Business Radio X.
Absolutely.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you. You can keep some in your freezer on hand at all times.
So now if somebody went to learn more one more time, the website?
It's frozenpints.com. Frozen pints, pint, like a pint of beer, pint of ice cream. And we're very active in social media. You can follow us at Frozen Pints, Facebook. We do tons of events around town, basically every beer festival and food events. And I'm always looking for new ideas of ways to be part of things. And one thing I didn't talk about, we actually just released a single serve container size for events and venues. So we started selling the Georgia Dome this past fall.
Wow.
So you can find our little carts out there, and the packs are kind of these little mini pints, and they have a built-in spoon under the lid.
Look
which
at
is
that. Cool
very
packaging.
Super cool. So yeah, those can be special ordered as well through your retailers.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show today.
Thank you very much.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Midtown Business Radio.